You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 283. This week, we talk about Superwoman, who killed Superwoman. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins. Remember how you told me to buy the individual issues?
Yes.
I went to do that, and on Amazon for issue one, in all caps text, the first thing you see, it's like, the death of Superwoman.
Ugh, so stupid.
Guys, don't spoil. Like it is a legit spoiler for the one issue they're selling there. Because, like, that's the thing that happens. It's like, I don't fucking know.
Okay, let's just get into that.
This week's comic.
This week we read Superwoman, and the trade is called Who Killed Superwoman? And it collects the first 7 issues of Superwoman from the Rebirth series, written by Phil Jimenez with art from... Shit, I'm terrible at this. I just had it open.
Can't believe you, Andy.
I can't believe me either.
It's loading.
I know mine's loading. Matt Santorelli and Jimmy Cox, at least for the first issue.
All right, then we're gonna go with those names.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, but that's okay. I'm annoyed at that on so many levels because, okay, like Rebirth had a lot of hype in it and a lot of stuff was known factors and people were excited about a lot of things that they were told were coming, like the return of Ted Kord and the return of this and that and the return of a more inclusive DC universe. But one of the things we weren't really told about was Superwoman. We were told that Superwoman is Lois Lane, and here's all of the alternate variant art covers, and they're all of Lois wearing the Superwoman outfit, and there's a really, like, beautiful Terry Dodson cover that was highly, like, prized, and, like, all of this hype was around Lois Lane, so then issue one comes out, and people are fucking shocked because the end of the first issue the hyped character dies out of nowhere, and like that is awesome, that is so fucking great. Like to hype up a character for 3 months, get you excited about it, and just do that to her at the end of the first episode, and you can because it's part of a Rebirth and it's an alternate universe Lois Lane kind of a thing, weird stuff in there, so like it's right. Totally it's beautiful and it's the perfect time to do it. And now it's like, if you weren't on the hype train the moment it happened, that surprise and that the joy in not knowing what's coming next is gone immediately. And it's like, you could just title it, Who is Superwoman? Like the first issue is titled, Who is Superwoman? And issues 2 through 7 are titled, Who Killed Superwoman? So you could just make the trade, Who is Superwoman? And make the Terry Dodson cover the front. Like you could maintain that surprise possibly for a lot of people and they just, didn't. And it's so sad because they struck gold and then let it go.
Yeah. Like, I really actually appreciated that they Ned Starked her. I thought that was a bold move.
Yeah.
But, I feel like, so the first issue was pretty solid. And even going in where Amazon.com spoiled it for me, like, that was fine, because the way it happened was interesting, and, you know, it was still quite engaging. I felt really punished for not reading, I don't know what else it was. Was it Adventure Comics or something?
Oh, Action that Comics, it was
advertising?
Yeah. Every episode, there's an editor's notes. It's like, go read Action Comics. Seriously, go read Action Comics. And it's like, no, I bought a trade.
Yeah, I felt really, really, really punished by the end for not reading Action Comics, and I don't want to spend my dollars on Action Comics because these are my Superwoman dollars, you know, like there's an allocation here. But by the end, I just had no idea what the hell was going on. I understood the main Superwoman plot, but like this other Lois and all the stuff with that, it felt like completely out there.
Yeah, I think, like, the stuff about Go Read Action Comics, that's all barriers to entry and what happened with Superman and the powers flowing everywhere, right? And we know that that's not the problem, because last week we read New Superman, and Kenan Kong's power comes from the spirit of Superman that was released, and these two's, the power of Lois and Lana in this comic come from the energy of Superman. So the same incident that spawned these Superwomen spawned Kenan Kong, New Superman. And that was not a barrier to entry in that comic at all. Right? There were a couple moments where it was like, what does he mean there by spirit of Superman? You have to channel through your chi? Like, I don't quite get, but what that came up on like issue 5 or some shit. Mm-hmm. And by then you're invested and you're just rolling with it. You're willing to go. But in this, it just felt like every issue, it was like, I needed that background because now this doesn't make sense. But what keeps it a barrier is that the pacing of this comic is real weird. Sometimes yeah. It seems like it's going real fast, and sometimes it feels like it's cutting back and forth. The things that don't make sense cutting back and forth. And I think that's the big problem, is the pacing is just real weird in this trade.
Well, you know, the whole getting their powers from Superman thing, they could have talked about it, but not made it a thing. I think like you guys said, the beating us over the head with go read Action Comics kind of built it up more than it needed to be for this comic, because Lana and Lois don't really know how they got their powers.
Yeah.
They just know that they got them because they were standing by Superman when he blew up. And you know what? That's a lot of superheroes don't got their powers from, at least initially. They don't have to tackle that in this comic.
Yeah.
They acknowledge it and then they can go on. Like, if they said Superman exploded and they got their powers that way, I would be curious, but I'm not going to run out and buy the, you know, those issues. But when they beat you over the head with it, it makes, at least for me, it makes me think I'm really missing something here. But it, I don't think it will add anything to the Superwoman story.
Yeah, I mean, if I read that, I'll get the background, but I think you're right. Like, it doesn't add to this story. It doesn't, I don't feel like it would significantly add to these characters. And I feel like having that background wouldn't fix my problems with the plot structure here and the pacing and the flipping back and forth between things that make it kind of jarring. Which is extra sad for me because I really like Lana Lang in this. I really honestly like her character, and I would love to read this Lana Lang, but this plot is so, I don't know, and there's so many things that have background that I apparently needed. I think, like, I don't even need the background. Like, we recap so much of Lena Luthor? I don't even know.
Lena Luthor.
Lena, like, we get so much Lena Luthor. I'm gonna go with Lena. Like, I was willing to roll with the fact that that Lex Luthor had a secret sister in the basement of the tower all this time, quote unquote. Which, I mean, might just be from the start of Rebirth, but I'm fine with retconning it from being like the beginning of time. He always had a sister in the basement because, fuck, apparently Captain America's always been a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Like, as a reader, I'm willing to accept that and roll with it for the sake of this story and how this story feels, because I don't want to be burdened by the continuity either. So I'm willing to go with that. But it's like, right at the point when I'm ready to be rolling with it, I read a note or a little thing that says that, oh, but you really should go read the old issue. Like, that's what gets me. You didn't even need to say that. And you saying that takes me out of rolling with it. And now I'm like, wait, what am I missing here? And now then I'm looking for what I'm missing, when maybe I wasn't missing anything to start with.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of my issue too, especially with the other Lois. So like at the end of issue 7, when Lana explodes, turns to dust. I guess. That's actually the part that really got me, because, you know, someone's like, what's happening to her? And then Lois says the same thing that happened to Superman, the same thing that's going to happen to me. And suddenly we're supposed to realize this other Lois is really important, and maybe she's going to star in the next trade. I don't know. But who is she? Like, she's just kind of random. She's been in, like, 2 pages of the comic up till now. Unless, and this is kind of the other thing. It seems like haunting ghost Lois might be different than this other Lois as well. So we got like three Loises going here. They're not explained, at least to me, not sufficiently. And we're supposed to believe that at least two of them are of like vital importance to the story. So yeah, that was confusing.
Yeah, I think that comes from the structure of Rebirth and how this is kind of like one universe asserting over another universe without destroying it. I think that's kind of how Rebirth works. So New 52 is kind of still real, and the pre-New 52 is kind of still real.
Right, the Superman that exploded and gave Lana and Lois their powers is the New 52 Superman.
Right.
And the ghost Lois is New 52 Lois. And so apparently in the New 52, the like Earth 1 Superman and Earth 1 Lois and their Earth 1 son were like secretly living in the world and not being super. He wasn't being Superman. He was just being a farmer. And so when they, so I guess like at the end of New 52 Superman comic, Superman like explodes and the other Superman steps in. This is the Earth 1 Superman. And so that's okay. Why there's two Loises.
Go on, sorry.
I was going to say, I think that's, he's the, I haven't read everything in New 50, or in Rebirth, but I think he is the only, like, holdover? I don't know how to say it. But like Andy said, they kind of brought a bunch of characters back. Like Wally West had disappeared after, pre-New 52, there was Flashpoint, and Wally just kind of fell off the face of the Earth, and they brought him back in with Rebirth, and like Ted Kord they brought back, and yeah, so that but basically that's why there's two Loises, and so there is a Superman, a Clark Kent Superman out in the world, and there is Superman Lex Luthor, and yeah.
Okay, see, I feel like that clarified a lot of things, and maybe they could have taken some of their word bubbles and put those words in them.
Well, they could have done like some exposition.
Yeah,
it's just it's difficult because like the origin of the relationship of these characters and their relationship to their powers comes from a continuity event, which is weird. Right, like I don't remember that happening before. Maybe Monitor and Anti-Monitor, but those aren't characters. They're just kind of they're functions of the universe, you know.
Right.
So it's so weird that we get a granular character of this level to be a function of the result at least of a continuity event. Like it's so weird because then the continuity event becomes integral to your understanding of these characters' interactions with each other. Which then it's mandatory reading almost when it doesn't have to be.
And I kind of think that's the issue. Like, it's actually really cool conceptually. I really like this idea of all these same people kind of coming together. And then, you know, like as a writer, you could go and explore their differences and where they're the same. And, you know, they can be foils for themselves. And that's just really neat. But, for the reader, I think it's really important to clarify if they need to know, like, a lot about these people. And this comic made me feel like these characters were really important. And that's kind of the thing. I'm like, well, if they're so important, why can't you tell me stuff about them in your comic instead of telling me to go buy a different one? And I know I sound like super salty about this at this point, and I'm not. It was just a real point of confusion for me.
Yeah, well, it's something that takes you out of it when you're reading. And I understand the creative difficulty here too, right? Because I think what Phil Jimenez is trying to do is make these characters speak and act in a way that would be natural in the context of their reality. Right? So Lana Lang is not going to turn to the camera and explain to you what happened in Rebirth, you know? She's going to proceed as though like, she knows what's going on, and everybody else around her kind of knows, like, she's going to act in the way that feels natural and authentic to her character, which is good writing. That's what you want characters to do. So, but then when we get the editor's note, maybe put it in the editor's note. Don't just tell me to go read 966 over and over and over. Action Comics 966. Like, you know, give me a slightly larger editor's note and tell me what I needed to get from that in a sentence or two. And it, you probably could. It wouldn't be that hard. But there's a couple instances where they do little flashbacks too that kind of work all right. Like, we get some Lana Lang perspective memories, as flashbacks. And that works too. It's just, like, I understand why, you know, of course, Lana's not just going to turn to us, the reader, and break the fourth wall. I get that. That's not what we're asking for here. But you got to find some happy medium. But I do want to talk about the characters, because I honestly, all of that said, I really, really like Lana Lang in this, because I like so many parts of her. I like that she is a complex person and a complex character, and she feels like a real individual, and I like that we get that from a female character, because even though I like reading female-led comics, even then a lot of times they feel like they're stand-ins for ideas and representations, but Lana feels authentic in this, like a real person, fleshed out and full, and complex, and I like that that's foiled with John Henry Irons, who is the woman on a pedestal, like, usually the trope of anything, really, for the last, like, hundreds of years, is that the man is a complex character and the woman is there as this ideal, beautiful thing that I must strive to achieve. But here, that's John Henry Irons. Like, she consistently says, oh, John Henry Irons is the perfect, unwavering spirit, and we all only wish we could be like him. Oh, and his perfect niece, she's the unbounded spirit of bravery. Like, she's putting them on a pedestal, and I like the gender reversal that's going on there.
I feel like we're going to have an awesome discussion, because my take on, not Lana per se, but this comic was like, this is bad caricatured feminism.
Oh, yeah? Let me hear it.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet where you're going to come from, and I wholeheartedly agree with a lot of what you're going to say.
I have a few things. So, like, I actually really did like how she kind of had this interaction with John Henry Irons. That was kind of cool. Like, that he's like the backup, right? Like, and she's the powerhouse in this. But, and the other thing I really liked about her was her trying to cope with her PTSD in, like, a really unhealthy manner. I thought that was addressed. Yeah, that was addressed interestingly. I hope that they finish it respectfully.
Yes.
I should say. Like, but that is a really good layout for a problem that needs to be solved. That aside, so her relationship with Lois, I know that there is, like, a 70-year history of contention
Eskimo
between these two characters. But here's the thing. This comic, I kind of feel forced to view it in this context where, okay, Superman's dead, and these ladies are now Superwoman. This is really new. And in that context, well, yeah, it seems like they both had an interest in Clark, but here it's like, oh, he was Lana's best friend. Like, that was said over and over. So that kind of, like, rivalry between them seems a bit muted. At the same time, their whole friendship is kind of built around this trope of they're really catty and kind of mean to each other, but the bond of sisterhood still brings them together at the end because women love each other and it's so sweet. And I fucking hate that. Like, like, I feel like that's a very shallow, before I get myself into deep water, this is a real kind of relationship that some people have. And it's not a, like, gender-specific relationship. Some people, like, are kind of at each other's throats and still deeply care about each other. However, that's not the sense I'm getting from Lana and Lois here. I kind of get this, like, well, we're both superwomen, and so we need to have this, like, witty, catty banter. And it's just kind of this, like, the way Lana talks about how she didn't want to be involved in this, and kind of, she has this kind of really, like, she's tired of Lois kind of vibe about her. Like, go away, leave me the fuck alone type of thing. It feels very much like she might genuinely not really want to be around Lois. And then she's like, but she's my friend and we were in this together as women. And I'm just like, that doesn't seem real to me, this relationship. This seems like a trope. The other thing is, like, I don't know, the mansplaining joke they stuck in there. That's not John Henry. That's not even mansplaining.
Yeah, it's not like, John Henry. That's the internet.
Yeah, like, when you mansplain, it's telling someone that, like, you're making the assumption that because they're female, they don't understand a thing, like, for instance, sports, and then you explain it to them, and, like, they're, like, rolling their eyes, because obviously, why would you assume this person doesn't know this just because they're a woman? However, if I recall correctly, I don't have it open and I can't find it. The scene is John Henry being like, I'm really worried about you. I don't want you to die.
Yeah, that's not mansplaining at all.
Context, that's called like caring boyfriend, like caring life partner. So I don't know. Like, okay. I have a problem with DC doing this thing where they're like, we're very progressive. Look at us being so progressive. And it's like, guys, you don't have to try so hard. Just write real people.
Yeah, DC does that a lot, and it is frustrating. And I think where you're complaining about their relationship is muddy water in this, because this Lois Lane is not the Lois Lane who has a relationship with Clark. This is the Lois Lane from New 52, where Superman had a relationship with Wonder Woman.
Okay.
And likewise, Lana Lang then was not part of the Superman's relationship circle. So these two, this set, are not the Eskimo sister set. That's the only good way. But the problems of the relationship that you're describing are still there. But when you reference the history of the character, like, this is another reason why having your fundamental characters be based out of a continuity event is bullshit. Like, the fact that they weren't the Eskimo sister, Lana and Lois, should not invalidate, like, you brought that context to this comic because you're a good comic book reader who has a history with these characters and likes them, and you shouldn't be punished for that.
Well, I actually feel like it makes it worse if they don't have that, because, like...
Because they have even less of a bond to draw them together?
Yeah, like... I feel like if you have someone shared in your life, like, that you're really close to, and I guess Lois must have been good friends with him, but it even feels like a little less reasonable for this, like, we got the sisterhood. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being nitpicky or, like, overly critical here, but it didn't fly with me. Oh, and I'm scrolling through. I got one more complaint, and then okay. I am done. Lena Luthor is the woman behind the man, because there's a woman behind every man. But this time, she's going to stand up and get her own.
Yes, yes.
I'm like, oh, Hallmark special, stop it.
Yes, that is, when you said you had a complaint about over, what was it? What did you say? Like, over explaining feminism or over...
Oh, caricature feminism.
Yes, yes, character. This perfect character. That is what I was thinking you were going to talk about. Because it starts off, the premise of the comic is Superwoman, as in, like, Lady Superman. And I'm conditioned to not like that after reading the Jane Foster Thor. Because in that, they're like, no, it's just fucking Thor, because I'm carrying the hammer and it says Thor. I'm fucking Thor. It doesn't matter what my genitals are. So for them to pick up a comic that says Superwoman, I'm like, okay, you could have tried something new here. Not like Superperson is good, but you know, I don't know. You could have tried something new or overextended, and you didn't. And then, so okay, we have the Lady Superman, and then we had the Lady Luthor with the Lady Bizarros. And it's like, we didn't have to ladyfy everything. I was like, is this gonna be? Is Lady Atomic Skull going to come out later? Is that what's going to happen?
Yes, 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 I want that. I actually don't mind the ladyfying in this case, especially I don't know. Like, I feel like
I'm sorry.
Just putting super in front of like your gender or like species is a completely like legitimate way to go.
No, it is. It is. I think because this ladyfying, but when it's just Lana and Lena, it feels okay. But when we get to the Lady Bizarros, it starts to feel like tokenism, and like overcompensating tokenism. Like, oh, we didn't have enough women, so let's ladyfy everything. For the sake of ladifying it and not for actual narrative reasons or specific purpose, let's just ladify everything. Yeah, and that then contributed to my feeling, like what you're saying, of the tropiness, the hallmark tropiness of Lena being the woman behind the man, and the man was just a bumbling idiot the whole time, and this is almost a sitcom.
You know what killed it for me? When... I forgot who it was. Someone was like, did you try turning your suit off and on again?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was a funny moment.
Wasn't that Kryptonite Man?
Yeah, I think it might
have been. It was one of those people who broke Lex out.
Yeah.
Or maybe the Atomic Skull. But one of them said that, and that was funny, yeah. But then it's kind of like, so this guy is such a doofus that, like, he can't even... you know, figure out how to make his suit work, and you're telling me he has, like, this multi-billion industry. Oh, wait, no, it's gotta be his sister, then. I don't know. It's
and
just,
he went,
like...
And he went toe-to-toe with Superman over and over? Like, it takes away from all those experiences, too.
Yeah, it was so... Okay, so I actually really am interested in, like, this relationship and the guilt and the anger and finger-pointing between Lex and his sister. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that could have been such a good thing to explore, but like they could have had it be like, oh, he just like, he feels so bad around her. He can't like pull himself together enough to function or something. But here it's like, I don't know. Their weird petty vengeance fighting seems very, it's like you said earlier, sitcom.
Yeah. And you're right. I hadn't even thought about the potential there because that when he's explaining their history, when Lex is explaining it to Lana, there is so much depth there that you could get into where Lex like is legitimately trying to help, but because he's an asshole, every time he tries to help, he just makes it worse. And like on purpose, he makes it worse, even though he went into it with good intentions. Like it's good because it shows that that's a fundamental piece of his character, that he is a dick on that level, and it makes her sympathetic, and it makes him a little sympathetic because even though it shows that he's fundamentally a dick, it starts with him trying to help. And so this whole thought of maybe him trying to be Superman is genuine. And it adds depth to those characters. It could, but then it just, it doesn't in the end at all. Yeah, you're right.
And I liked her too. Like, I think that she was such an interesting character conceptually. Like, because Lex Luthor would be crazy enough to lock his sister in the basement and make her invent shit. Like, that is like a great, like, horror premise right there.
Yeah. And I love her character design. I love Lena's character design when she goes full Brainiac almost.
Oh, man. See, I did not. I did not like it.
No. Oh, man. I was like, fuck it, yeah, let's go Borg Queen. Let's just drop her head into the suit with, like, snake tail made out of technology. I was like, fuck it, yeah, you don't have a body.
But
make whatever the hell you want
it
to be.
Later, she just became, like, a head floating above the suit. And at that point, I was like, no, I don't really like this anymore.
Yeah, I guess. Because it evolves issue to issue and gets more and more extreme as time goes on. I think there's some points in between where you and I would be like on totally the same page.
Like in issue 7, she has 6 arms, a snake tail it looks totally organic, and the torso is floating above the waist, I guess, and then the head, which is a normal sized head, is floating above everything else. I don't know. I guess it's supposed to look menacing, but it doesn't look menacing at all to me. It just looks nuts.
It's like, lady, I could stick my hand right between your head and your body. Come on. That ain't right.
Yeah, it feels a little like Rob Liefeld sans pouches.
Oh, good.
Harsh. Well, the thing is, like, I think she kind of looks kind of all-powerful, like cosmic being type of thing, but I don't know. I don't get that sense of from her.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just didn't enjoy. I didn't really like. I think at first her character design was okay, but then as it evolved into this wacky thing in issue 7, I was no longer on board with it.
Yeah, I think her power level ramps up issue to issue so fast, it ramps up faster than the reader finds it believable. Like, by the last issue, she's, like, reforming the Gestalt in midair, using her brain powers as she's floating in her suit of, like, wait, how did we get there from here?
Like, that I buy. See, this is the problem with comics, right? Like, I buy into that, but I don't know. I just didn't like the character design, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Which I did.
Yeah. So let's talk about the real hero of this comic, the Atomic Skull.
He was great.
I like that he makes Lex say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because he's a petty guy, and that makes sense.
Whoa, 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 whoa. He was totally justified. They, like, did prison experiments on him, and all he wanted was an apology.
Yeah. And it didn't have to be genuine. He's pretty yeah. Accepting, that's true.
No, I really liked that take on the villain, where he's, like, at a parade wreaking havoc, and then in reality he's just like, help us!
I'm trying to get attention!
Yeah, he's bad at it, but then again, okay. Superhero comics universes are the kind of place where if you've been a villain once, literally no one will ever listen to you again. So, I kind of get it.
Yeah, Lana wasn't hearing it. She just ran in and started punching him, kept punching him until she couldn't punch him anymore. And then when he was finally restrained and not knocked out, because John Henry was like, please just restrain him, don't knock him out. And she's like, all right, fine. Only at that point does she even consider listening to a word he has to say.
Yeah, I actually liked her anger issues. They should have... I don't know if it was just like, oh, this is her personality, or if it was like she's having this tied in with her other problems, but it was interesting.
I think that's her, and that's part of why I like her. And I like her cursing. She curses a lot, and I love it. I love it, because, again, that is genuine feminism. You just have a character that's a real fucking person. Like... We don't ever see women curse in media and comics, because women are the more virtuous side of this. Like, no! No! Yeah, she can cuss! It's fucking fine!
They sure fucking do.
Damn right! You know?
But, like, oh, sorry. Yeah, her personality's real. Like, I really like how they just... She's kind of ornery, but it's not... Because, you know, like, she's been through shit, and she actually is this way, and that's just who she is. She's kind of ornery, and that's cool, man. Like, I love that so much. She's just... It's really good, too, compared to Superman, because Superman's, like, so wholesome and good and never ornery. And having someone take up his powers and his mantle, kind of, and then, you know, not being defined by that... You know, apple pie wholesome goodness, I think, is a good move for the character.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. That's something this shares with last week, too. Last week, we get an entirely different kind of character inhabiting those kind of powers. And it's interesting to see how these different people deal with it. We haven't even mentioned this, and we've been talking about this comic for half an hour. I love that she's the electric red Superman, because that's canon again, apparently.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a great little wink and nod to old readers. And it makes me wonder, are we going to get an electric blue? I want a blue.
maybe the other Lois will be the blue one.
Ooh. All right, I'm going to have to pick up issue 8 just to find that out.
Doesn't come out until next month.
Oh, fine.
I looked it up.
Put it on your pull list.
All right. I guess I will. I'll put on the poll list, because the covers at least are good. The covers of these comics are good.
Yeah, I mean, the Terry Dodson number one, it was excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then... Oh, and then number two, when it's Lana on the cover, in almost the same pose, holding Lois's cape behind her. Like, ah, oh, that's your friend's cape that died. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Number 5 is really good, too. The alternate one and the main one, like where it's 2 Lanas. Those are like...
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty cool. I like
that. Yeah.
I love the coloring on those so much. Like, I don't know. The cover art is, like, really, really good for all of these.
Yeah, and I'll admit that's why I picked up issue 1, because it had cool cover art. And then at the end, Lois died, and I was like, wait a second. She was on the cover. This isn't X-Force. People care about this character. Because I know we read X-Force, and that happened there, and it was like a quote-unquote kind of big deal. I think it was mostly a big deal for Nick, who was our guest host that week. But, like, nobody cared about those characters. Nobody cared about those people. This is fucking Lois Lane, though. You can't just kill Lois Lane. That's bullshit. But they did it. Issue 1. Only they didn't, apparently. Which, like, that's a terrible bait and switch, because I saw her ashes blow away. What the fuck?
It would be so amazing if what this series did was just, like, keep taking Lana's and Lois's from other universes and just, like, plopping them in and having them, like, having you kind of, like, get to like them and have them explode.
Ooh.
That would be a thing.
That would make sense for the story, too, because that's what Lena did with the Bizarros. The Bizarro that ends up helping them is the Ultra Woman from the other universe, from Earth 2. No, not Earth 2, Earth 3, which is the one where the crime syndicate's taken over.
Earth 3, I think.
Earth 3, yeah. So, I mean, that would make sense in the continuity of the story and what they're going with. Because they're going, like, all those different Bizarro Superwomen were different Superwomen that were turned into Bizarros. Or used their DNA to create, like they are multiverse-based Superwomen Bizarros. I don't know how I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, that's why they have different...
Different power
some
sets.
Some of them have different powers, yeah.
Yeah. So that would be hilarious if that's what they were doing, and just killing all of the Loises. Let's kill all of the Lanas. Fuck them. What are we missing here? Oh, Bibbo. Bibbo showed up.
Yep.
I didn't know he had a daughter.
I know, me either. Go Bibbo.
He always is, like, trying to get everyone killed, and no one tells him to stop, ever.
Well, I think it's just because it's kind of his thing.
Yeah, it wouldn't work.
It's like, yeah, it's just Bibbo.
You could try to tell him to stop, and it won't work.
People are like, oh, he's so brave. He loves Superman, and he's so brave. I'm like, no, he's going to get people murdered.
He's a fucking idiot is what he is.
Well, he wants to, you know, he wants to live up to his hero, Superman. If Superman would do it, he would too.
Man, that's who should have gotten the random streak of energy to get the powers.
Bibbo?
Dude, if New 52 Superman died and a stray-like strand of it went up and just gave Bibbo a fraction of the powers, just a fraction, for like a month, I would read the fuck out of that graphic novel. If I got an Elseworlds comic where Bibbo accidentally got Superman powers...
You know what would be cool? If the only power he got was invulnerability.
So every time he was like this, he would just get punched and be okay.
Oh my, like he could step up to any villain, but he couldn't actually do anything about them. Except annoy them to death.
Okay, I would read that.
I would read that, and I would really want it where he gets the full on powers, because he would lose his fucking mind, and that would be hilarious to read. But that, yeah, just the punching bag, though, that'd be great. That was what comic is that that's the kid's power?
That would be
Kick-Ass?
Avengers Initiative. No, well, okay. There's a character from like the Civil War era, the first Marvel Civil War, called, his name is Butterball.
Oh yeah, this is right. I forgot about Butterball.
And his powers is that he's invulnerable. But otherwise, he's like a normal guy, and his body can't change, so he can never get stronger than he
and
is.
He's like fat, right? He's like forever stuck being fat. Yeah.
Kind of sad, actually.
I forgot about that character, but that's, yeah, that would work too. I was thinking of Kick-Ass. the kid who has like a neural impairment where he doesn't feel pain, so his superpower is it can get the shit kicked out of him and stand up again.
I don't remember that.
That's not a power. I don't think we've read that for the comic. Or for the show.
But I read Kick Ass, the first one. I don't know if I read it.
I don't think we did for the show. I feel like I only watched the movie.
That's fine. You got everything in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Forgot he was in that. Man, I love Nicolas Cage.
Definitely. He's underrated.
Well, we have reached Nicolas Cage effect in this episode. You guys ready to rate this?
Wait, should we talk about the art?
Oh yeah, that's the thing we do.
All right, so here's what I think about the art.
On.
I think that the close-ups of people's faces are pretty good, but the like big scenes where whoever the focus of the panel is like far away and small. I didn't like those as much. I thought they were kind of, I didn't like it. There you go.
All right.
Yeah. My thing was, I can't tell if tribute or just the way it is, or because we're all trying to be Lena Luthor, but there's a lot of floating heads. Like, an astounding amount for the year 2017. I really wanted to point that out. That's all I got.
Yeah, I feel like part of our disjointedness earlier is the writing, but you can also cover that up in coloring. Like, as you're flipping between scenes, or time is advancing, or something, like, visually there needs to be a cue there. Because that's one of the great things about comics, is if you don't want to say it in the words and you can't say it with the text, or it's too slow or too clunky to do with the text, you can do it seamlessly visually. And the functionality and versatility of comics as a medium was not taken to its fullest advantage here. And that's part of the reason why it feels so awkwardly paced and clunky, because there's no visual cue to let me know, oh, wait, are we actually back on the farm? Is this a dream? I don't know what's going on here. Did I miss an episode? Did I skip an issue? Why is Lois back? It's a ghost. Oh, she's daydreaming. Wait, no, it's not a daydream. There's Lois there. Like, what part of the... What? Huh?
a couple more
visual goods. That issue is the one that really fucking threw me for a loop, where it opens with them at the farm. Like, nothing had happened. I'm like, okay, this must be a flashback. But then I checked and it didn't say, you know, weeks ago. So I was like, okay, maybe it was a flashback and they just forgot to say something. But then they mention the things that happened in the comic. I'm like, this can't be a flashback. But then what the fuck is Lois doing there? And then all of a sudden, the next page, they're in a bar. And Lana has to explain to us, oh, that must have been a dream, or I'm going crazy. I'm like, okay, that was a daydream that's all in her head. But then Lois is just walking around all of a sudden. And I'm like, wait, that's a different kind of thing. And there's no,
yes.
there's no visual cue, no visual help between that transition, between those three states of Lana's craziness, or like there's no visual help. And the text help is minimal. And like that's a good example of what I kind of needed more of in here, is in places like that. Otherwise, I really like the art. I really like the character design in a lot of places.
I'm flipping through in issue 5. So this is the third comic in as many months that has had Hillary Clinton in it. So my guess is this came out in like January. They probably were doing the work for it October, November. There's a picture of the White House, and then there is a picture of Clinton. And I'm like, they had to have assumed that she won that election before it actually happened.
Jinxed it.
Ugh.
It's fucking DC.
Now we
fault.
Know whose fault it is.
Fucking DC.
Also, everyone has a double chin. It's like half the drawings of faces were like someone opened up the front facing camera on the iPhone and then like kind of held it under. I looked through. There's like. So in the art style, like, a lot of the time the chin is kind of drawn, so there's, like, this extra line, and I know it's not a double chin, but it's a double chin.
That's great.
Especially on John Henry Irons. I am not steel.
Oh, yeah, I see his double chin now.
Yeah.
Which, of all people, not to have a double chin.
The only person to, like, never have one is Lena Luthor, because she has no neck. Oh, this is amazing.
Okay, let's rate this.
All right.
Jen, you go first.
Okay. It's a two. Like, a lot of the time I come in with a Cape comic and I'm kind of like, eh. And our conversation clears up a lot of stuff and makes me feel like, oh, you know, I just missed that thing. This is actually really cool. No, our conversation made me realize that this comic could have been a lot less confusing and that the characters could have been, I don't know, more fleshed out, better explained. That said, I actually did like the art. I joked about it and was kind of mean about it, but it's solid. I kind of have the same complaint. I think David said that, like, up close it was good, but far away.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked how they portrayed Lana as a person who is trying to cope with grief and hiding that she's coping with grief, and she's doing it in this really unhealthy way, and she obviously found a very bad therapist who just gave her some magic pills and, like, never talked to her again. And that is an unfortunate thing that does happen to some people. And, like, I think there's a lot of potential for some really amazing character growth and development there, assuming that she hasn't just disintegrated into dust and that issue 8 is going to be about, like, the new Lois. But I guess we'll have to buy it to find out. But yeah, this just didn't do it for me. I felt like it was clunky. And I think in the past hour or whatever that we've been talking, I, you know, explained all my reasons for that. But it does have really solid potential. So, 2.
All right. David?
I'm going to give it, I'll go with a 2.5. I mostly liked it. But I think the main reason why I want to read the next issue is because this one kind of just left you hanging. I was not satisfied with that as an ending, but overall, I think the story was okay. I thought there were some interesting ideas that came up in the comic, but, you know, some of them didn't pan out well. The art was pretty good. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either, so yeah, I think 2.5. It's pretty average. Not bad, not great.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 2. I was going to do a 2.5, because I feel like 2.5 is an average comic, and as Cape comics go, this is pretty much on par. We've talked about a lot of things that upset us, but there's a lot of things that are really good here. So it would be 2.5, but I'm going to circle back to what we started off the conversation with. Why the fuck do you spoil this, DC? Like, I'm going to give this a 2 because the one, like, really, really awesome redeeming quality of this comic is the quality of the cliffhanger. And to be able to set it up in a way that the reader doesn't see coming and genuinely wants you to figure out what the fuck just happened, that's a difficult thing to pull off, especially these days. And they did it. DC did it great when issue 1 came out on the shelves. And they've completely obliterated the possibility for that to happen when a new reader comes in. So I'm going to have to give this a 2 instead of a 2.5 just because of the name of the comic is completely spoiling it. And as much as I kind of want to read issue 8 to find out what happens to Lois / Lana, I don't know if I want to take the time when there's other great comics to read. When we got another comic to read for next week and the week after that and all that kind of good stuff. Because it's average, and I've got some above average comics I need to read, and I'm still a little miffed. Anyway, that's it for this week, and that's it for our Best of the Big Two 2016 series. Next week, we're going to go on with the Best of the Rest 2016. So these are all of the comics that came up from publishers that were not DC or Marvel. Next week, we are going to read Rosalie Lightning by Tom Hart. Then after that, we're going to read Joy Rye by Jackson Lanzig. Then Faith, Hollywood, and Vine by Jody Hauser. Then Monstrous by Marjorie Liu. And I'm... guys, next week when we read Rosalie Lightning, prepare your emotions.
Okay.
Because Rosalie Lightning is a memoir about a comic book creator who lost his daughter. So yeah, prepare your emotions.
All right.
I know nothing about it past that, but it gets amazing reviews, and that kind of story needs to be read too. So we're going to do it. And it's going to be real tough because I'm a new father. David's a twice over father. It's going to be rough, but we're going to do it. And it looks so good. It looks fantastic. And good comics deserve to be read no matter what they're about. Hopefully we get a good discussion from it like we did. What were the other ones? Can we talk about something more pleasant? What was the one with the flowers on the cover from that same series? Oh, it's going to kill me.
The flowers.
Okay, hold on. I gotta look this up. It's gonna kill me too much. I have to look this up. I know, that's a really descriptive thing. Flowers on the cover.
Are you thinking how to be happy?
Yes!
Eleanor, is that her name?
Eleanor Davis.
Eleanor Davis. I follow her on Instagram.
Holy shit, Jen. I said flowers on the cover, and you pulled that out of your ass. Wait a... That's baller.
I only remember really useless shit. This is my talent.
Because that comic, and Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, were both kind of difficult to read in places, but were fantastic. And Underwater Welder got rough in places, too, and was really, really good. So let's strap in. Next week, Rosalie Lightning. Until then, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.